Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Carson Partners, a division of CWM, LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors. This is The Way to Wealth, with host Scott Ford, a jiu-jitsu fighting, woodworking, beekeeping entrepreneur who is also the managing director, partner, and wealth advisor of Carson Wealth. Financial freedom is the goal, and clarity and simplicity is how we'll get there. Let's get to it. This is Way to Wealth.
Hello, and welcome back to the Way to Wealth podcast, where we're all about making money simple so you can fully live and do that today, not 30 years from today. This week on the podcast is someone I've had several conversations with, haven't met personally, but have met just like this via Zoom, Dr. Keith Witt. Bumped into him in Integral Theory, Ken Wilber, and then with Paul Check, and was fascinated with his work and wanted to share his wisdom on the podcast. So before I do a kind of formal bio, let me just say welcome to the Way to Wealth, Dr. Witt, and thanks for joining.
I'm delighted to be on this podcast with you, Scott.
Thank you. Look forward to sharing your wisdom. And so a little bit about Keith, for those that you don't know, he's a licensed psychologist, teacher, author who's lived and worked in Santa Barbara since 73. He's conducted over 70,000 therapy sessions and published 9 books, including Loving Completely and several others. But I think Loving Completely is one I want to jump into. He's married to his wife, Becky, since 73 and has 2 grown children. So tons of wisdom, Keith, that has to share. So let's jump into it. A couple of things I wanted to talk about. Let me set the frame first. Maybe gives you some context, Keith, and then certainly the audience knows this, but The Way to Wealth is a wealth management podcast. Okay. So The Way to Wealth is our process I developed in 2002 about how do we make money simple. It doesn't have to be that complicated. And, you know, it's very intentional. So the way, the number 2 and wealth, wealth's an acronym, but if you think of the way is the Taoist philosophy of being in harmony with what is and kind of living in the present moment. So it's very intentional, the way. And when I think about the way, living life, I frame it in 4 things. I frame it in living a life of health, wealth, wisdom, and happiness. And then I have 3 points under each one of those. So if I just jump into happiness, because you can have all the money in the world, but that doesn't make you happy. So when I think of happiness, I think of happiness being derived of gratitude. What are you grateful in your life? The second thing I think about happiness is having a dream or purpose. Like, what are we here for? What am I contributing, right, with my time and effort here on this earthly plane? And then lastly, relationships. Aha, hence why you're here. It's like healthy, happy relationships. I mean, not having them can drive to not being happy, and then having them can just really create super happiness. So that's my frame, right, wrong, or indifferent. And so that's one of the things I was excited to have you on the podcast about. So let's go there first. Let's talk about, you know, you've written lots of books and several on relationship. Specifically Loving Completely, which I mentioned in your bio. Why is relationship such a central theme in your work?
When I first started doing therapy in 1973, therapy to me was a calling. I wanted to be a psychologist when I was 15 years old and started studying martial arts and psychotherapy at that time. In Zen Buddhism. And it became obvious very quickly to me that everything is relationships. Relationships with the different parts of yourself, relationships with your past, present, and future, relationships with other people, the hierarchy of relationships in your life, from the most important to the less important, but all of them important. Relationships with your own narratives of your own life, relationships with the country that you're in, with the economic system. I would going through your podcast and going, it's really nice to have somebody honor the fact that how we exist within a financial system and an economic system really, really matters in terms of our health, our happiness, and our relationships. And so it became obvious to me that everything is relationships. I mean, if you think about it, there was only one thing once in the universe at the Big Bang, and then everything has been relationships ever since. Interestingly, since the Big Bang, the bias in the universe is towards greater complexity. That's why we're having this conversation. I mean, you and I started out as plasma 13.7 billion years ago. And now look at this. We're way more complicated, complex than plasma. And you and me together are way more complex than either one of us alone. And humans also, the more, by the way, the more that I've studied this, taught this, researched this, the more apparent it has become what a big deal this is for us to honor our relationships with all the different parts of ourselves and with other people. And you can't separate those. If I don't have a coherent set of relationships with myself, it limits my capacity to be intimate with you. And if I especially don't have a good relationship with my shadow, with my adaptive unconscious, that limits my capacity for intimacy. Okay? And that's a huge big deal. One of my books, Shadow Light, is specifically about this, because it's the whole concept of shadow, you know, the stuff in us that we don't know but is there, has been misunderstood by 20th century psychology and needs to be reevaluated in the light of modern neuroscience. And so everything is relationships. And when people come to see me, they actually reflect the values that the NORC study from Chicago they put out every year has said what people associate with happiness. You know, the NORC study says there's five things arranged in order about what people say most contribute to their happiness. It's always the primary relationship first, followed by relationships with family and friends, followed by a sense of financial security, which is a big deal and a hard one in this country, followed by a sense of spiritual connectedness, followed by a sense of purpose. Interestingly, it really tracks health, wealth, wisdom, and happiness. A lot of people come to me because they're not happy with their relationships. And if you're not happy with your primary relationship, you're not happy. You know, it starts there. You want to have a happy life, have a good relationship. Okay? Now, the other things, purpose is important. You know, financial security is important. Certainly health is important. You know, and all of those contribute. But if there was just one thing, it's that. Now, as a psychologist, I have to take into account everything in somebody's life. You can't just focus, and people go, well, I'm an OCD psychologist. Nobody's an OCD psychologist, or I'm a cognitive, you know, I'm a trauma specialist. Nobody's just a trauma specialist. It's all happening all at once all the time. I mean, it's all relationships all the time. So when I wrote Loving Completely, I thought, okay, there's this staggering amount of information in the world about what creates good relationships. How do we make it accessible? How do we apply it? You know, when the rubber hits the road about how am I relating to you at this moment, it's either going well or it's not. In a way, you can look at almost all connections like this as one of three forms of connection. One, we're connected without obstruction. Okay, that's intimacy, right? Two, we're connected with a partial obstruction. One of us feels a little defended, a little threatened, and it's interfering with the quality of you and me, our inner subjectivity. And three, we're connected, but there's an obstruction that basically blocks intimacy. Nothing's happening. Anybody that's listening to this, if you've ever had an argument, which basically is everybody, you might remember that nothing happened in the argument. People try to argue their way back to intimacy. Never works. The way you solve a problem is you get back to intimacy first, and then you solve the problem. Everybody goes, no, we're gonna talk this through. And the way we're gonna talk it through is like hammer at each other. There's no connection when you're hammering each other. There's a complete block. So what happens is people often become exhausted. They go to sleep. They change states. And then they enter a connected state. Then they make progress on the problem. You know, that's just one of a thousand things that are useful to know to be able to love well. So the challenge to me in loving completely was, okay, so how do we make this accessible to all of us? And what I came up with around this was there's five dimensions that if we ask ourselves questions about these dimensions, our unconscious will give us an answer. And so I orient people's relational process around these five questions. And I'll mention them. I call them the five stars in my book. I came up with them, you know, I don't know what, 20 years ago. My daughter, we were in the kitchen. My daughter asked me, how do I choose a boyfriend? And I just had a download on this. It is such an extraordinarily rare occurrence for a 16-year-old girl to ask her father, how do I choose a boyfriend?
That's the first thing I was thinking. Yep.
It's like, this is an opportunity that I could miss. And so my unconscious delivered these things. You ask yourself these five questions. When you ask yourself a question, your unconscious answers. So the first question is there a spark of erotic polarity between me and this other person? We're talking about a primary relationship now. We're a pair bond species. 5 million years ago, came down out of the trees and created the pair bond. And then the ancestral tribes organized around the pair bond. This has such social complexity that it forced our brains to evolve. Our brains have evolved primarily in service of relationships. The biggest threat to humans the last couple of million years hasn't been tigers or tornadoes. It's been other humans. And so the human brain has gotten more and more complex, and our capacity to relate has gotten more and more intense, and we're the only ultra-social primate species. Basically, that pair bond and those social demands are the basis of modern civilization, the basis of the evolution of consciousness. But it starts with that pair bond. Is there erotic polarity between me and this other person? And you'll answer it. You can ask that question about the girl next door right now, and you're going to get a yes or a no most of the time. It might not be accurate, but your unconscious has an opinion. So this is how we access our unconscious. The second question, and you ask this about other people, and you also ask it about yourself, because if the answer is no about yourself, then you're not going to be a good partner for somebody. You know, don't date somebody you don't feel any erotic spark with. The second question is, does this person take care of their psychological and physical health? Do they maintain psychological and physical health? Doesn't mean they have to be buff all the time, but they arrange to be healthy. And if there's a problem, they get help and influence and get healthier, both psychologically and physically. If someone doesn't do that, it wrecks relationships. The third question, and again, you can ask that question. Those of you listening can ask that question about me. Does Keith maintain his psychological and physical health? And most of you go, yeah, he does, because I do. And we communicate vast amounts of information, just facial expression, tone, all that stuff. And, you know, if I ask that about myself, I'd go, yeah. And if you guys ask it about yourselves, it'll be yes, no, or maybe. And, you know, explore that. The third star is, if I was in a relationship with this person, would they be able and willing to do what it takes to get back to love if we were in conflict? Okay, so we're in a relationship, we're in conflict. Is this person able and willing to do what it takes to get back to love? Able, meaning they have the skills, the self-regulatory skills and the knowledge. And willing, mean, are you willing to deal with the discomfort of conflict to be able to get back to love? And am I willing to do that with somebody? The fourth star is, would this person show up appropriately for a child or a family member? This is great. When my daughter was 16, she says, look, daddy, I don't want to have a baby with this guy. I just want a date. And I said, well, first of all, Zoe, I'm delighted you don't want to have babies with guys at 16. That's just good news to begin with. Second of all, it's not about having a baby. It's about if somebody wouldn't show up appropriately for a child or a family member, at some point, they're not going to show up appropriately for you. And appropriately is important. you know, sharing, being codependent with a family member, you know, like putting up with your partner's alcoholism, that's not showing up. That's being codependent and supporting that person's alcoholism. Don't do that. And that's a whole nother conversation. The fifth star is, does this person have something that's larger than themselves, something sacred, something that's important to them? Okay. And when you were talking about happiness, you talked about purpose. Purpose is sacred. Human beings are born with six, at least, moral foundations. We're born to be moral creatures. We're born to develop morally in these six dimensions. And society and family and the life conditions and our personality will determine what kind of moral structures we'll build and keep building, because moral structures are always evolving in each one of us. And one of those is sanctity and degradation. That's one of the moral structures. And purpose has a quality of sanctity about it. Okay? And that's what lets us know that it's deep purpose. It's not just for aggrandizement or for profit. There's something larger that I'm committed to. For instance, this podcast. This podcast has a sense, has a sense of sanctity to you that lets you know this is deep purpose and you have it. And people who have that, particularly the masculine in us, really cares about purpose, just like the feminine in us really cares about whether love's happening. And so the masculine in us suffers if we don't have deep purpose. So you ask those five questions about somebody else, and if the answer is no, it doesn't mean like you go ghost them. If you're in a relationship, you go have a conversation about it. Okay. And clients of mine have been dating the second or third time. They bring the Oreo or their couple, they'll bring the questions out and have conversations about it. And this is especially important because a lot of times what happens with couples is they avoid going into the areas where there's distress, and that just makes it worse. And this is, gets back to shadow, to our unconscious. There's principles and rules about how our adaptive unconscious, our shadow selves, work. That if we understand them, we can use those rules to grow. But if we don't, we can have our growth arrested. Let me give you an example.
Yeah. Go ahead. Keep that train of thought, Keith. And because, so one of the things I want to put out there. So one of the things, through the years that I have come to is just indigenous wisdom, bringing ancient wisdom and marrying it ideally with modern day technology and time. So here's some of the ancient wisdom that I've learned through the years. One is the, you know, principle of doing the healing at the individual level, then the family community, and then you can go to the world, right? And so I think of it here, these five principles are amazing in intimacy and far as in a relationship, and then doing the healing work first makes sense, though most of us don't do it, but still makes sense, which would include the shadow work. So you talked about it's all relationship, and first it's relationship with self to include the shadow work. So I would love to, and maybe it's where you're headed, but if you're not, I definitely want to get into the shadow piece because I think you think about it a little differently than a lot of people. And I want to dig into that just a little bit as we focus on healing at the I level and then getting into the we level. But so we'll definitely want to get into shadow work a little bit.
Great. So let's start on the I level and then move into the we level. In the 20th century, the idea of shadow came with Carl Jung, who wasn't satisfied with Freud's concept of this undifferentiated libidinous id that just la 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 all the time. You know, grab, 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 rape, 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 pillage, 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 me, me, me. It's not like that doesn't exist. We all have that. But Jung really felt that there were much more sophisticated and complex structures that people weren't aware of that were operating on them all the time. He intuitively knew that, and he was right. Though when he was talking about shadow, he was talking more about destructive stuff. You know, more along the lines of Freud's libido. Well, and then other people, Ken Wilber has his own concepts about shadow. What neuroscience has told us is that we have a vast adaptive unconscious that involves many forms of memory, and it anticipates and associates all the time. We take in hundreds of thousands of inputs every second Our unconscious chooses 7 plus or minus 2, and then will deliver to us impulses, a story, and emotions to guide us through the world, okay? For instance, morally, we make moral judgments instantaneously, and then we start unconsciously looking to justify them. We do not evaluate the way that Kohlberg, who came up with moral development, thought we did. And so that's a big deal, knowing that, because then that helps us understand our own moral decisions I'm making. So the stuff that comes up from our unconscious is either constructive shadow or destructive shadow. So that stuff comes up, the story, the impulse, the feeling, and we're consciously aware of it if we are, half second, second and a half later. You know, this state arises in 40 milliseconds. We're not aware of it consciously for half second, second and a half. And as we move through the world, we're moving through the world, basically the present moment is about 9 seconds for most people. We're experiencing that as where things are happening. So the stuff that comes up is either constructive shadow, which helps us be pro-social. Remember, we are ultra-social. And let me give you, Jonathan Haidt, who wrote the book, The Righteous Mind, says we're 90% chimpanzee and 10% bee. And that when we flip the hive switch, when we act like bees, we create miracles. And that's true. You know, the Hall's telescope. This video, I mean, that came from people organized together, making something magic happen, okay? But then that 90% chimpanzee, just, you know, me, you know, this, that, whatever, you know, dominance, submission, like that, okay? And so human beings are situationally bees. You know, if we feel secure and connected and we both have a shared purpose, man, we create miracles. That's constructive shadow. That's my unconscious joining, first of all, telling me, guiding me in a way that makes me healthy and happy and connected. And if I'm with you, it guides me to have us be healthy, happy, connected, making miracles happen. Constructive shadow, pretty great. Destructive shadow is my nervous system reads a threat. Any kind of threat. It imagines a threat, any kind of threat, it protects me with a defensive state. And that story, feeling, and impulse is associated with defending myself. And those states have characteristics. And the characteristics are there's amplified or numbed emotion. We get jacked or we get shut down. Distorted perspectives. If I'm going to fight with you, I have to have a simple story about how you deserve punishment. You deserve my attack. If I'm going to run from you, I have to have a distorted story about how you're unsafe. There's a distorted perspective. So there's amplified or numbed emotions. There's distorted perspectives. There's destructive impulses to fight or flee. And the parts of our brain that are associated with empathy, you know, connecting emotionally with each other and self-reflection, being aware of what's going on with me, they get shut down. Because if we're at risk, our brain doesn't want us to sit around contemplating the risk. It wants us acting and defending. That's destructive shadow. Okay? And it tells us we're not safe, which is strange because most people on this planet are safe pretty much all the time. Even in a war zone, you know, you're safe like 999.9 minutes, and then you're really not safe for about 30 seconds. But, you know, those other minutes, you know, nothing's happening. Bombs are not falling. Okay, I'm not starving to death. Now, most people, when that negative stuff happens, that destructive shadow comes out, mostly their conscious self just goes with it. Kind of, oh yeah, this person's a bad person. Oh, here's some other reasons why they're a bad person. You start feeding the defensive state. Now, if you're a couple and one person threatens the other person, good example, he's supposed to arrive at 6 and he's late. Okay. So she's kind of, he's late, 4 or 5 minutes, a little bit irritated. 10 minutes, she's a little bit scared. 15 minutes, what the fuck? You know, she calls him, gives him a call. Oh, I just had to stay a little late. You know, I'll be almost there. She said, why didn't you call me? I didn't think of it. All right. That's threatening to her. So she has a story, amplifying numbed emotion, anger, okay? Distorted perspective, he doesn't care about me. If he cared about me, he would have given me the call. Destructive impulse, I'm going to tell him what a horrible thing he just did when he gets home. What a great idea, huh? And this lack of empathy. Look, the guy had just finished work. He's on his way home, happy to see me. I'm just spacing out on that lack of self-reflection. I'm indulging in a defensive state. I'm about to wreck the night and I don't even know it. Okay. Now, if she's aware that she's entering a defensive state, she goes, uh-oh, I'm entering a defensive state. She reaches for empathy. I got to remind him to call me because I get worried and let him know that, you know, after a while, I know it's hard, but, and maybe I should call him more than 1 or 2 minutes after the hours just so I can check in and not spend time getting pissed off. And then he walks in the door. She says, you know, I was worried and I got mad. And then I decided I need to call you if I'm worried. He said, that'd be a great thing to do. And I try to remember, but I forget. That's fine. I love you. You know, kiss, kiss. Okay, that's great. But if she's not aware of it, he walks in and says, you know, you don't care about me. I've told you before that I want you to call me and you didn't do it. You know, so you just care more about your own thing. I mean, what were you doing? Just stop and have a drink or something? I mean, he goes, what? You know, I was just looking forward to coming home. Now you're acting like such a bitch. You know, like you never really understand. Okay, here we go. 3 days later, they're still unhappy. Okay. Now, I wish that this was unusual. I really wish the people who are listening to this go, God, I've never heard anybody doing those things before. But unfortunately, it happens all the time in intimate relationships. And intimate relationships progress through stages. You know, you get attracted, you get romantic infatuation, maybe fall in love with each other. That lasts anywhere from 6 to 18 months. But biologically, that changes into intimate bonding. Intimate bonding, we get more of our family of origin energies, which means our defenses are more there and there's less sexual urgency. There's a lot of these stages in relationships, stresses, transition into parenthood, stuff like that, where these defenses come up and they, when one person does it, the other person will come up with a complementary defense. No, you know, you think I'm screwed up, let me tell you how you're screwed up, back and forth like that. And these become rapidly defensive patterns. You know, a couple of people can meet, hang out with each other, something weird happens, and they develop a pattern. That pattern will become typical of their relationship as long as that relationship goes. I mean, our brains are very quick to program defenses. Why? We come from 2 billion years of creatures where my survival comes before anything else. And so brains don't give up stuff that's associated with survival. And that worked really great until we hit this current era of modern egalitarian relationships of equal power, where we don't resolve issues by one person dominating another. By the way, resolving issues that way is quite effective. You know, it works for chimpanzees really well. You know, they're pretty successful. It doesn't work in hunter-gatherer social groups who need to be more collaborative. And so they needed to develop more win-win situations and more collaborative situations, especially because in a tribe, one person can't dominate because a bunch of beta guys can go kill an alpha guy. Okay. So that's why we don't have, we have egalitarian relationships in most tribes. That's why we have women having equal power. But when agrarian society came, we could accumulate power and guys could hire a bunch of other guys to do everything. Then women became property and guys could, you know, dominate. And, but you know, women can dominate also. But now we have these egalitarian relationships where we have to come up with more complex solutions than that, which is good. That's a superpower. And the intimacy that can come from that is extraordinary. It's unlike any intimacy that's ever existed before. It's beautiful. My wife and I have been together 50 years. Every year we've loved each other better and we've worked hard at it. So, you know, I'm a happy guy and that's at the center of me being a happy guy. You know, my wife, Becky and I, okay. So in these relationships, we have to grow to be able to notice the destructive shadow, regulate it in the constructive shadow, regulated in the constructive stuff. And when we do that consistently, what happens is our unconscious grows. There's an awful lot of regulation of being irritated that I don't have to do consciously anymore. I did it consciously enough that my unconscious starts doing it for me. I'm still having to regulate irritation, by the way. You know, it's not like the irritation response goes away. It gets included and transcended in a more complex neural network. So think about how badly, the worst you've ever acted. Everybody's thinking, absolute worst you. I mean, you know, really worst. that person is still there and able to do whatever you did. Now, you don't want to hate that part of yourself. You just want to take that part and say, look, I'm not going to let you do that horrible stuff anymore, but I know you're part of the deal and you're part of the congregation here and everybody has a use sometimes. You know, I'm a martial artist. So martial arts, you just learn all kinds of horrible ways to kill people. So there's part of me that goes, yeah, you know, somebody busts me off, I'll just go kill him. And then I go, no, we never do that. But, you know, if you're ever jumped in an alleyway, I'm going to turn you loose on whoever's doing it. And then, you know, you can protect us. And he goes, okay, fine. Okay. So you don't get rid of those parts. You integrate them. And you accept them in yourself and in your partner. My partner has a lot of habits in her, parts of her that, you know, can do things to hurt me or irritate me. She regulates those. But I don't blame her for having them. We're 90% chimpanzee. Okay? All that chimpanzee stuff, that's still there. I'm just saying, you know, like take responsibility for it and then create love. And that's what the 5-star book, Loving Completely, was meant. We're hitting all the dimensions that I'm aware of that influence love. And we keep checking them out. We keep asking those 5 questions. Why do you keep asking the 5 questions? I ask those 5 questions about me and Becky, that not consciously, I'm just noticed. Because if you ask them enough, it stops being something you consciously do. Remember, your unconscious takes over, your shadow takes over. They become sense organs. So I have sense organs now. I notice whether there's a spark of erotic polarity or not between me and somebody. I notice whether somebody seems like they take care of their physical and psychological health or not. I notice whether I think they could get back to love with me if we had conflict. I notice whether they show up appropriately in my opinion, for a child or a family member. And I notice whether they have deep purpose. And I notice it in me. So as you develop those sense organs, awareness regulates. You start regulating towards those things. Mm. And couples that do that do really well. They get healthier. They get happier. Their kids do better. Their friends do better. They walk into a room and they're value added in that room. We love those couples.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's that in and of itself, Keith, is tons of wisdom, the 5 points that you just went through. And I think it's in your book, Loving Completely. And so I know I told you this was going to be a little short on time. Sure. So if you're okay with it, we'll have you back to continue on. In the meantime, though, where can people, because one of the things is you put this information out, I believe, accessible on your website, right? So people can find this information at drkeithwitt.com. Is that right? To find out more information about you and your work, including book Loving Completely?
Well, yeah, you can. This year, I decided to give everything that I have done, all my work. I have a lot. I've done a lot of work, a lot of lectures, a lot of videos, classes. I'm giving it all away for free, except Loving Completely. I can't give a manuscript away for free because I have partial rights to that, you know, integral life. So you'll have to go to Amazon and get it. Everything else on my website is free. I've published 10 books on 8 with publishers and 2 I've published on my website. Get copies for free. You can see my classes that I used to sell. Get them for free. I have hundreds, maybe thousands at this point, videos. And I had a web series once I did called Therapists in the Wild, where I did rants about stuff. This was a lot of fun. It's all for free. The reason why I'm doing this is because as you move through the world and you grow, at some point you recognize you have a cosmology that orients you. And if you're reaching for the highest good, that cosmology is going to naturally fit with everybody else's cosmology. And so I'm offering mine both to help people in all these different areas, but also I want people to find their own cosmology, their own sense of meaning in the world and recognize how it's connected with all the rest of us. And that realization is a wonderful realization, because after you have it, you never feel alone. You never feel disconnected again. That's why I'm offering everything for free on my website, drkeithwitt.com, www.thebestofyourself.com.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thanks for sharing, Dr. Witt, and joining the Way to Wealth podcast. We'll have you back on for a run back and more wisdom, maybe on regenerative capitalism. We've had a conversation about that. So let's go down that rabbit hole next time. Thanks for joining, and find out more about Dr. Keith Witt at his website, drkeithwitt.com. And audience, thanks for joining again this week. We'll see you back next week on The Way to Wealth, where we're all about making money simple so you can fully live and do that today. And hey, if you don't have relationship, then what's the whole point? So thanks for sharing your wisdom, Dr. Witt. We'll see you back again.
My pleasure.
The opinions voiced in Way to Wealth with Scott Ford, Managing Director, Partner, and Wealth Advisor of Carson Wealth, are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Way to Wealth are not affiliated with CWM LLC or Cetera Advisor Networks LLC. Legato Family is not affiliated with Cetera Advisor Networks LLC or CWM LLC. Carson Wealth, 19833 Leitersburg Pike, Suite 1, Hagerstown, Maryland, 21742.